This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba here to talk with you through the hour about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. Do you have a question for Zorba? If you do, call 800-462-7413. Zorba, we have some interesting research to talk about during the hour.
Yes, a new use for Viagra. Maybe it's useful in jet lag. I knew that would perk you up, Tom.
All right, and?
A pill about heart attacks. Let's talk about whether or not Avandia, the pill that's made by GlaxoSmithKline, actually causes heart attacks or not. A pill for diabetes that may actually make your diabetes complications even worse.
Well, okay, that's coming up. And we have a recipe, a special guest chef recipe.
That's right. Portobello Philly cheesesteak sandwiches. It's a great recipe. You will love it.
We'll have a medical myth buster a little later in the hour for you, too. So lots of good reasons to stay tuned. Again, if you'd like to talk with Zorba, 1-800-462-7413 is the number to call. Zorba, a listener joins in now from St. Louis, Missouri. Hi.
Hi, gentlemen. Well, first of all, thanks so much for making health interesting.
Thank you very much for the stroke. We appreciate it. How can we help you?
Well, at this time, I happen to be canker sore free, but it's a pretty rare occurrence for me. I seem to be growing these things in my mouth about once a month, and I'm curious if you have any insight as to what may cause them or what I can do, more importantly, I guess, to prevent them.
Gosh, canker sores can be just awful, yeah. Awful things.
I'm glad you called because I'm getting canker sores lately, too,
oh,
and
really?
I'm wondering about
really?
It.
So, Zorba, do you get canker sores a lot, Tom?
I didn't used to, but mm-hmm. of late I have, yes. Mm-hmm. So help us both out.
Yeah. So now these are in the mouth, not outside the mouth.
Correct.
Right, not on lips. What do they look like when you look at it in the mirror? What do your canker sores look like?
Some alien form of life, actually. It looks almost like an open sore, maybe like a bit swollen and sort of wide a little bit around the edges, I guess.
Okay. And the reason that I ask that is there are the herpes canker sores, which are not the same thing. And they are usually bubbly little things. They're little bubbles that are either on the lip or inside the mouth. Usually, you know, a day or two before they actually activate, they stay for about 10 days. And the ulceration that you're describing comes late on in the course of the sore, if it comes at all. A few things let's talk about. Do you take a multivitamin every day?
I do not.
Okay, I would recommend a multivitamin. There's some evidence that may work. There's also some evidence that vitamin C may actually help cold sores, either preventing them or when you actually get them to resolve a little bit sooner. And the vitamin C that I recommend would be a natural vitamin C, 250 milligrams, maybe three or four times a day. The chewable vitamin C, I think, is a little bit better because if there's a cold sore that's starting, you'll get some local care by sort of chewing that vitamin C. So vitamin C, multivitamin every day, yogurt.
Actually, I do. I eat a fair amount of yogurt almost daily.
Okay, because yogurt is really good to try to help prevent cold sores. And then there's a probiotic called lactobacillus. A probiotic are, if you will, they're sort of bacteria that you take that are the good bacteria in our mouth. And lactobacillus, which is this sort of probiotic, may also help prevent cold sores. Again, none of these are really perfect when it comes to cold sores and cold sore prevention. A prescription medication, which will sometimes work for very painful cold sores, something called Kenalog in Orabase, K-E-N-A-L-O-G, Kenalog, which is a steroid cream in Orabase. Orabase is this sticky stuff that actually sticks to your gums. And for some people, that will help resolve the cold sore a little bit quicker. And that's a prescription medication. But I think I do a daily yogurt once or twice, lactobacillus, the probiotic. I would take vitamin C three or four times a day and that's about it. It's not perfect.
Well, you've given me a great direction. I certainly appreciate the help.
Well, thank you. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, we appreciate the call. Thank you very much. I have little raised things inside my cheeks, uh-huh. which I think are because I've bitten my cheeks when stuffing food down my mouth in the past, and they sort of stay there all the time.
Oh, that's very interesting. Well, why don't you call the 800 number and help answer that question? This isn't Mr. Free Advice. You've got to call the 800 number and then I'll answer the question. So you got these little nodules. Well, I'll do it for you because you're a buddy of mine.
What a nice guy.
I'll just do it for you. Sometimes we do bite the insides of our cheeks.
Yeah.
And it's not from the past. It's that you may be biting the inside of your cheeks when you are sleeping. You might have bruxism where you're clenching your teeth and you're biting the inside of your. That's what I think. I think you're biting your own cheeks.
So the solution is I should stop doing that.
Stop sleeping. That's the solution. Don't sleep and you'll have no trouble.
800-462-7413. Zorba will be much better to you, much nicer to you than he is to me. I guarantee. 800-462-7413. So, Zorba, we have a new possible cure for jet lag.
That's right. Viagra. Viagra. Everyone knows Viagra is the cure for jet lag. This is a very interesting study. First of all, it's a rodent study. It's a study of rodents who have jet lag.
For jet lag.
Right.
They take them on planes.
Some of these rodents, they have to go to foreign countries in order to do their work.
Oh, come on,
You've
really?
Seen them dress in suits and ties.
How do they do this? They don't take the rodents.
Male hamsters, and they're given Viagra. And what they do is they're actually a model for jet lag because they do it with light and dark in the cages.
Oh.
And then they measure how quickly they actually go
in the cage. So they change kind of the day and night.
Well, they've discovered that when they change the day and night, the hamsters sleep differently and it takes them days to recover.
Right. Like,
similar to what we do for jet lag.
Yeah, right.
Right. Then they gave the hamsters Viagra. Okay. Now, why they decided to give these hamsters Viagra and then measure them for jet lag was not mentioned in the particular article from the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, which is really a very prestigious journal. But nonetheless, these particular researchers decided that Viagra might be the answer. I don't know where they got that
from.
Voila. What they found, though, was that Viagra, in a smaller dose, by the way, than Viagra is normally given for erectile dysfunction. By the way, Viagra is used for other things. It's used for a form of pulmonary hypertension, which is an extra sort of excessive blood pressure, if you will, in the pulmonary arteries, and it is effective for that. They discovered that when they gave Viagra, that it helped the hamsters essentially control their jet lag. Their jet lag wasn't as bad.
Yeah.
But there's a fly in the rub, if you will. It was only when the hamsters were going eastbound. If they were going westbound, it didn't work.
But isn't jet lag only when you're going one way anyway?
It happens for me in either case, whether I go east or west. So if you're going eastbound around the globe, maybe you should take Viagra, and maybe that'll help your jet lag.
My guess on this is that really...
By the way, these were male hamsters. I don't know if they were female hamsters.
Okay. My guess is this has nothing to do with getting rid of jet lag. It just gives the hamsters something else to think about. And they don't care whether they have jet lag or not.
Maybe
that's my guess.
Maybe that's it. We'll have to question those hamsters.
800-462.
Another great study on Zorba Pastor on your health.
1-800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. And a listener with us now in Plymouth, Minnesota. Hi.
Hi. How you doing?
Fine. What's up?
Well, I'm calling about allergies. My daughter, my youngest daughter, and I have been having quite a few symptoms, and she more than I. She's been having a lot of congestion and headaches every day.
Mm.
Last week, she actually had migraine.
Mm.
So I was just wondering, right now what we're doing is we're taking some stinging nettles, and I have her doing the neti pod as often as I can get her to, but she's 10 years old.
Oh.
So I was just wondering if there's any suggestions.
Can I just ask, is this a seasonal thing with her? Has she had this in the same time of year on a regular basis for a few years or no?
This is the first season that's happened, but there have been hints of it.
Uh-huh.
Was you know, it you know, it sounds like she has allergies. That's what I mean. That's what it sounds like to me. In which case, I mean, the treatment, you know, a neti pot really isn't going to do very much for allergies at all. I mean, the treatment, if she has allergies, and it certainly would be worth kind of what we call a therapeutic trial. A therapeutic trial is, gee, it sounds like allergies, and let's try the medications because it's, you know, they're not, they don't have excessive side effects by any means. Mm-hmm. And so what you may want to try with her is an over-the-counter antihistamine Claritin generic, easy, cheap, inexpensive. I'd give her one pill a day, and if that doesn't work, I'd double it to two pills a day. And then I would talk to her doctor about getting a steroid nasal spray, which is really very, very effective for allergies, and see what that does. Now, when I was 10, 11, 12, I had allergies, and I was really fatigued from the allergies. It made me feel stuffy and fatigued and uncomfortable. And in those days, the only antihistamine that was on the market practically was Benadryl, and I would take that and it would put me to sleep.
Right.
So I would go from sleepy to sleep, which was really not the way I wanted to go. And pseudoephedrine, which is Sudafed, was on the market, but it doesn't do anything for allergies. It helps the nasal congestion, but it doesn't get rid of the problem. So I would take over-the-counter generic Claritin, one or two tablets a day, and see what that does. And if that doesn't work, I'd go to a spray. Neti pot is good to get rid of the mucus, but you want to stop the cause of the mucus. And I think, you know, at 10, she may just be developing allergies. And to me, that's the way to do it. I wouldn't bring her in for expensive and extensive allergy testing. I would give her a therapeutic trial first. Easy, cheap. That's the way to go.
Yeah. Okay, great. Well, thank you very much.
Appreciate the call. Thank you very much. I was going to ask about that. Do they still do that pricking you 100 times to find out what you're allergic to?
For you, yes. No problem. No problem. We can easily prick you 100 times and then tell you that you have some allergies.
How about for somebody you like? Would you do it for somebody you like?
Well, those tests are done.
They're scratch tests.
And we do them really for people who we can't figure things out or if the person really wants to know. But on the whole, we have such good antihistamines on the market today that don't make you sleepy. And we have such good treatment with nasal
sprays. So you don't tend to bother with that.
Generally, what we do is we treat first. And if that fails, then we go and see that. There's much less allergy testing today than there was years ago. And frankly, it's because we have more effective medications today.
Gotcha. Listener joins in now, Zorba, in Bloomington, Indiana. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help you?
Okay, here we go. I've experienced symptoms for about a year now that no one has really been able to figure out. Basically, in the mornings when most people wake to pressure in the bladder telling them they have to use the restroom, I don't feel that pressure. I do feel acute pain in the upper right-hand quadrant of my abdomen. And sometimes I don't wake from that even, usually when I'm really tired or you know, I'm sleeping really deeply. So then what happens is the pain spreads around to the back and even near the spine, and it's quite severe sometimes. Mm. And I finally wake up hunched over, and I drag myself to the restroom. And once I begin to urinate, though, the pain kind of dissipates almost immediately, and I can even feel everything, you know, draining out, not only from my bladder, but also from that right-hand side. Hmm. And if the pain was really severe, it takes about, you know, 20 minutes for the residual pain to actually go away.
My.
So I don't know what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is going on for how long?
A year.
Year. You've seen a doctor for this?
Yes, sir.
Uh-huh. What'd they say?
Initially,
who'd you see? Regular family doc?
A family physician, and they ran a bunch of tests, and they couldn't figure it out. They thought it was irritable bowel.
Mm-hmm. What kind of tests did they run? You mean blood tests or urine tests? Or
urine and blood. They gave me a gallbladder function test. They've given me, you know, kidney, and they've given me pancreas. They've given me an ultrasound of those areas. And then recently I was given a cystogram.
Okay, so you were seen by a urologist.
As well, yes.
And then you had a cystogram, which is where they're looking at the bladder. They're looking at how the bladder is emptying. Is that what you meant by that?
Right, yes, sir. Because my family doctor couldn't figure out, so she sent me over to a urologist.
Okay.
Right.
Uh-huh. And then it's kind of the logical thing to do, to look at it and see. What happened with the cystogram, the voiding, which is where we measure how you urinate?
It came back normal.
Mm-hmm. A couple of recommendations. First of all, you need to see a neurologist.
A neurologist? Mm-hmm.
You bet, because there's something, well, you don't have the sensation of your bladder filling. You know, you've got A, you don't have the normal sensation. B, you've got an abnormal sensation. They're kind of two different things. Mm-hmm. The question is there something going on neurologically? The reason that I mention it is there are a variety of degenerative neurological diseases, fancy term that means the nerves aren't working right,
okay,
that can produce unusual sensations, and that's where you're going to get your bang for your buck. You do that after a urologist goes, hey, you're emptying your bladder properly, and we don't see any problem with that. I think you need a neurologist, because frankly, this is strange. I mean, it doesn't kick anything in my brain as to the cause of this. There might be some doctor listeners out there who will email me, and they usually do. And I always appreciate those emails because by no means do I know everything at all.
Right.
But there's something, and I think a neurologist is really the way to go for this.
So the hardware is working, it's the software.
Right. Yeah, that's kind of it. By the way, you know, there's something interesting also when you talked about it. You said the word restroom. You didn't say the word toilet.
Right.
Okay.
You know, in the Midwest, we say the word restroom. In the East Coast, they say the word toilet.
Huh.
I don't know why.
You said washroom.
Yeah, I said washroom.
Yeah.
Well, my mother taught me that toilet washroom is not a word that we really say
exactly.
very often in public.
Exactly.
But that's very Midwestern. In other words, we're so far away from the excretory functions of our body
yeah.
that we don't even want to mention, you know, the porcelain throne.
We wash it, we rest.
Restroom. Where does this come from?
I wasn't really assimilated here because I'm originally from the West Coast.
Oh, you see? Oh, West Coast. I have no idea what they do in the West. You are totally assimilated. You're using the word restroom, you are assimilated by definition.
And hey, good luck with this.
Thank
yeah,
you
good
so
luck.
Much.
Yeah, good luck.
Yeah, please
all
let
right,
us
sure.
get the call. 800-462-7413. Let's grab a question from our Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox now. This one comes to us from a listener named John. Interesting, we're talking about restrooms and washrooms. John has this question.
Right. Thank you.
He writes, I have regularly used sunscreen because I heard it would help prevent skin cancer and slow down the aging of my skin. But I'm concerned about studies showing some of the chemicals in sunscreen absorbing through the skin and causing cancer in animals. Do you, Zorba, have any advice about what sunscreen is safe to use for someone who uses it a lot?
Well, if we look at the FDA, the recommendation is still to continue with the sunscreen, that the cancer risk, if it's there, is about as minimal as you can be. I mean, the studies show that if you give, you know, 1 billion times the amount that you normally would have as a human, maybe there's something that's there, but I think the risk is very minimal. I think it's just a hodgepodge of stuff. It's one of those internet myths that are out there. Now, some people with PABA, P-A-B-A, which is the most common ingredient in sunscreen, they react to the PABA and they don't like to take it because they react to it. But I don't think there's any credible evidence that sunscreen causes cancer by absorbing mm-hmm. into your skin. The issue with sunscreen is that these are chemicals that we put on that actually retard the ultraviolet rays that are going into the skin. They retard the burning, for the most part, it's UVB rays that are actually going through the skin.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they do. And there is no natural sunscreen because a natural sunscreen is not to go in the sun and use a parasol.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
clothing.
I was just going to say, you don't have to have a parasol.
Right.
You can have, even in the hottest
right.
summer,
absolutely.
long sleeve shirt, and wear a cap
right.
to keep it
That's
off.
Exactly yeah. it. There are other things you do, and frankly, yeah. they're much more, for the most part, they're more effective than sunscreen in keeping the sun away from your skin. So yeah. that's what I would do. Wear a broad-brimmed hat, use long sleeve clothing that is very loosely
Yeah.
a fitting that's out there. You know, something you don't want to stay indoors when it's a beautiful sunny day out
there. Of course
there.
Not.
And if you want to avoid the chemicals, don't use them. But the big division is PABA, P-A-B-A, and non-PABA. And if you're more concerned, I'd go to the non-PABA because the PABA has been implicated in some skin rashes.
Excellent. Well, you keep your questions, tips, and comments coming. Just send them in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Now, coming up, we have guest chef Joyce Hendley joining us to talk, Zorba, about
Yes, we're going to talk about a wonderful recipe. It is Portobello Philly cheesesteak sandwich. It's a new rendition of an old recipe for the vegetarian in your heart.
Mm, I love Philly steak sandwiches.
And you love mushrooms, don't you?
I like mushrooms.
Oh, I love
I don't
mushrooms.
Love mushrooms.
I love
I
mushrooms.
Like mushrooms.
I love mushrooms.
Anyway, that coming up, more of your calls, too. We have some more research coming up. We have our medical myth buster all here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI Public Radio International. Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That 800 number again is 800-462-7413. But before we take our next call, Zorba, as you know, our guest chef today is Joyce Hendley. Joyce is the nutrition editor for Eating Well magazine and co-author of the recipe book, The Eating Well Diet, 7 Steps to a Healthy Trimmer You, which outlines a lifestyle plan on healthy eating habits. Her book also contains over 150 heart-healthy recipes, one of which, the Portobello Philly cheesesteak sandwich, we're going to share with you right now. Joyce, welcome to Zorba Pastor on Your Health's Radio Kitchen.
I'm so glad to be here.
So great to have you with us. Now, how did you come up with this Portobello cheesesteak sandwich, which is actually heart healthy?
Well, you know, everybody loves Philly cheesesteaks. If you didn't grow up in Philly, you've had it as a street fair food. And it's really basically a mountain of fried beef and onions on a big, soft, white Italian roll.
Mm.
And topped with lots of gooey melted cheese.
That's exactly, my mouth is watering.
That's exactly what I remember. That's what I'm thinking of. I'm just picturing exactly what you said.
But now that can't be your recipe because it wouldn't be that good for us.
We wanted to take all that pleasure and get it in a vegetarian version. And believe it or not, it can be done using portobello mushrooms instead of the beef. You know, they have a very meaty quality, kind of a chewy, beefy texture.
Mm-hmm.
So especially when they're grilled or browned or pan fried like we do in this recipe. So you get a lot of that meaty pleasure. And then we bumped up the vegetables, of course. Always need more of those.
Mm-hmm.
And a little less cheese. And it's a very simple recipe, but it's just one of those things you can reward yourself with.
Okay, well, we have it in front of us here, so we'll go through the ingredients. You feel free as we go to join in, jump in, talk about things, and Zorba probably will ask you a question or two, okay?
Sure. Or three or four.
Okay.
Okay, we start out with 4 whole wheat buns split in half.
4 whole wheat buns split in half.
Now, I think you immediately, you know, one of the issues that we have, obviously, is we don't get enough whole grains. So immediately taking the white Italian bun that is the traditional bun and making it whole wheat makes a big difference.
Absolutely. It adds fiber and texture, but they're easy to find these days, too.
Yeah.
You know, a couple years ago, we couldn't do this.
Oh, no. And something, you know, about this, just simple changes like a whole wheat bun versus a white bun, these simple, small changes make a huge change in your diet overall.
Gotcha.
I mean, you know, I think if you agree. 2 teaspoons of extra virgin olive oil.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And we love extra virgin olive oil. 1 medium onion.
A medium onion
sliced. Now, do you use a white onion or a red onion? What do you like to put in here?
I prefer a sweet onion, sort of like a Vidalia, only because you cook them for such a short time, they don't really get a lot of time to develop that nice sweetness, caramelizing.
So you like Vidalia onions?
I do in this recipe, but regular white or yellow onions will work just perfectly fine, too.
Sounds great. 4 large portobello mushrooms sliced.
4 large portobello mushrooms sliced.
Now, what if you can't get portobellos? What could you use other mushrooms, traditional mushrooms? What about shiitakes?
Oh, sure.
Or,
that'd be wonderful.
What would it be like with morels? I mean, you know, sometimes it's morel season. I can just imagine what that would taste like. Okay, 1 large red bell pepper thinly sliced.
2 teaspoons
of oregano.
to little T oregano.
Now, this is dried oregano or fresh oregano?
You could use both. Mm-hmm. Everybody's got dried in their kitchen, so you can use two little T or
everybody
a
but
fresh
Tom.
Oregano.
Tom does not have dried oregano
not everybody.
In his kitchen. Or Italian spice. We actually get a spice mix that we often use for this, which would be great, too. Half teaspoon of freshly ground black pepper.
Half a little tea, freshly ground black pepper.
A tablespoonful of all-purpose flour.
Big tea flour.
Okay, quarter of a cup of vegetable broth or low-sodium chicken broth.
Quarter cup of vegetable broth or low-sodium chicken broth.
I was going to say, this is a little unorthodox, but this is where we get that fried, beefy flavor with the flour and the broth. Well, you'll see in the recipe, but it adds just another layer of flavor that makes you really feel like you're getting some beef there.
That's a good
idea.
So
it's the flour and the broth. Now, when you use a veggie broth, you still almost get that illusion of that, like you say, of that sort of substantive, beefy type flavor.
The Japanese call that umami.
Umami.
It actually translates into deliciousness or meatiness.
I guess
soy sauce
It gives it the juiciness of the steak.
Exactly.
Kind of. Yeah.
That quality of that just makes you go,
Yeah. Gotcha. One tablespoonful of reduced sodium soy sauce.
A big tea of reduced sodium soy sauce.
And then here's another place to look at fat and fat reduction. 3 ounces of low-fat provolone cheese.
3 ounces low-fat provolone cheese.
Yeah, you think that's hard to find in places? I think
it's... Well, where you are, it shouldn't be too hard to find in Wisconsin. But and I was going to say, cheddar, low-fat cheddar is really wonderful these days. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not like they were 10 years ago. So if you don't find provolone, low-fat cheddar would be a great substitute. But the idea is that you want something with a little flavor, so you don't have to use a lot.
Yeah. So... let us go through how we do the recipe.
Sure.
Toast the buns in a toaster or conventional oven at 350 degrees. Then, meanwhile, heat the olive oil in a large nonstick skillet over medium heat. Add the onion and cook, stirring often until soft, beginning to brown, and that's about 2 or 3 minutes. Then add the mushrooms, bell pepper, oregano, and pepper, and cook, stirring often until the vegetables are wilted. And you're starting to salivate, thinking about how delicious this is going to be, like I am. Which is about 7 minutes. Reduce the heat to a low. Sprinkle the vegetables with the flour. Strain it to coat. And then stir in the broth and soy sauce for that. What did you call that? The fifth flavor is what the Japanese? What is it? What was the word
umami?
Again?
Umami.
Umami.
Yeah, and that's really where we're putting in that extra flavor and that one step there. It just takes a minute, but all of a sudden it tastes like it's fried.
So how long, when you stir in the flour and the broth, how long do you continue to heat it?
Just really another, not even a minute.
So
the idea is just sort of to coat them and warm it through.
So
and
just enough. So it's not actually doing, it's coating it, warming it through, and not doing any actual cooking that's going on.
Well, there's a lot of heat going on in the skillet, but you don't want any more than that because then it would burn, and there's nothing worse than burned flour.
Right. Got it. I agree with you. Remove it from the heat. Lay the cheese slices on top of the veggies. Cover and let stand for 1 to 2 minutes until it's melted somewhat. Divide the mixture into 4 portions with a spatula, leaving the melted cheese on top. Scoop a portion into the bottom half of each toasted bun and serve immediately, as all Philly cheese steak should be. The Portobello Philly cheesesteak, serve immediately. I can almost smell it.
Yeah. How's the nutrition breakdown on this?
I was going to say, before I came here, I looked up on the University of Pennsylvania health system. They have an analysis of what a cheesesteak normally has in calories and fat.
Tell us. What does a normal cheesesteak have?
Oh, just 900 calories.
Wow, 900 calories. Now, we need, the average person in America needs roughly 1,800 to 2,200 calories a day.
Yeah.
So if you have a normal chili cheesesteak sandwich, you're having half your calories.
Yeah.
That doesn't count the Coke you have with it or the chips. You know,
and
your
cheese fries.
And the cheese fries or the beer. You're stuck with the beer. Well, in our analysis, this has roughly 260 calories with about 10 grams of fat. Not much saturated fat in here at all, 22%. I think it's a dynamite recipe. 23% of the protein you need from the day, and this obviously, to a great extent, comes from the cheese that's there. I think this is a wonderful recipe. I'm going to go out and do this.
We have the book right here, and the picture, it looks delicious.
Yes, it looks mouthwatering. Thank you very much for sharing this recipe with us. I'm sure that our listeners will want to get a copy of this, beyond a doubt.
My pleasure. I hope they do.
Bye-bye, Joyce.
Take care.
Thanks.
Joyce Hendley is the nutrition editor for Eating Well magazine and co-author of the book, The Eating Well Diet, 7 Steps to a Healthy, Trimmer You. For more information and recipes, visit our website,
zorbapastor.org.
For today's recipe, send a stamped self-addressed business-sized envelope to Zorba Pastor on Your Health, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, zip 53706.
And don't forget, we've got our podcast. You can sign up for this recipe and get a weekly podcast of our recipes by just going to our website.
one 800 462 7413 is our toll-free number. That's 800-462-7413. Zorba, a listener joins us now in St. Louis, Missouri. Hi.
Hi, Zorba and Tom.
How can we help you?
Yes, I've been experiencing some vertigo problems for the last 2 years, and I've had 2 different doctors diagnose me. And unfortunately, I'm getting 2 different opinions.
Hmm.
And I'm still having the problems, and it's still to a point where sometimes it's serious, and sometimes it's almost debilitating.
Huh.
2 different opinions. You mean one from
each doctor?
Oh, from each doctor.
Yeah.
Not an opinion from a relative.
No.
What are the 2 different opinions?
Well, the first doctor that I saw was about 1.5 years ago, and he told me to take Robitussin CF and Dramamine and 5 milligrams of Valium.
Now, wait. He gave you Robitussin CF and 5 milligrams of Valium.
Right.
Ooh.
Along with the Dramamine.
How many times a day did you take the Valium?
I took the Valium twice a day, maybe 3 times a day.
So you were taking 5 milligrams of Valium 3 times a day along with Dramamine 2 or 3 times a day. How'd you stay awake?
I couldn't, and that was a major problem. I mean, I work a large amount of hours, so it was very difficult for me to take the medicine and still be able to function.
I'm not surprised you were taking a tranquilizer. So how long were you on this Valium, Meclizine, Robitussin machine?
Well, the Dramamine, Valium, and Robitussin I did for 1.5 years.
Did that for 1.5 years?
Yeah,
did you get any work? Did you lose your job?
No. As a matter of fact, I got promoted. Figure that out. But I mean, but I did that for 1.5 years, and it just wasn't working. And I knew
I'm not surprised it wasn't working.
And after 1.5 years, that really weighs on you and really brings you down.
Yes, it does.
Literally. Yes. And I just knew that there had to be something else. So I went to a different doctor, and he said, no. You need to do the Meclizine 3 times a day and do physical therapy for your ear.
Right. And the physical therapy are a list of maneuvers called Apley's maneuvers. For some people, it can be very effective. For other people, it does nothing at all. I take it that it didn't do anything for you at all.
No, nothing.
Okay. So a couple things. You've had your glasses checked, right?
Yes.
Okay. It's not a glass issue.
No.
Right? What do you
no.
do for a living, by the way?
I am an advertising marketing manager for a casino in St. Louis.
Okay. Oh. So it's not as if you are, you're checking roller coasters for a living and
I sit at a desk all day and look at computers. And,
yeah, okay,
and
so it's not that. Does it bother you when you're on vacation?
I just got back from Italy, and I did fly a 10-hour flight, yeah. And the next day I had a spell of it for only about 2 hours.
Mm-hmm. One of the reasons I want to know is I want to know if this is a computer-generated visual problem and whether or not it affects you on the whole when you're working and doesn't affect you nearly as much when you're not working, because I assume you'll be on the computer more when you're working than when you're not working. Have you noticed any change there at all?
I have not. It could affect me at home or driving a car or at my desk. Mm-hmm.
You're at work. You're at the computer most of the day.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And when you're not at work on the weekend, are you at the computer a lot or not?
No, not really.
What about when you're on vacation?
No, not at all.
Not much at all. Have you seen a neurologist?
No, I haven't.
Okay, you need an ENG, ENG, N as in Nelly, an electronystagmogram. And that's where they look at how your eyes are tracking to see whether or not when you twirl around as a child and the world appears to be spinning,
right.
What you're actually doing is inducing nystagmus. You're inducing your eyes going back and forth very quickly. Okay. They go back and forth very quickly. You may just have vertigo, which happens intermittently, but you've got to be tested with this ENG, and you have to see if you have something called Meniere's disease, which is where you can have this dizziness, sometimes associated with nausea and sometimes with hearing loss. You might have that. Neurologists will tell you that. But I think you need the ENG to look and see whether or not this is a visual tracking problem. And the other thing I would recommend is stay away from Valium.
I agree.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye.
Can you imagine taking 5 milligrams of Valium 3 times a day? I mean,
no.
You know, I mean, that's. I mean, for a year and a half, I mean, he was sleepy and tranquil.
And you feel good, though, with that. Well, I shouldn't have gotten the name of his doc. 800-462-7413. A listener in Lexington, Kentucky now. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
I had a question which you guys kind of alluded to earlier with the recipe, and that was that I was more or less, having read a lot on nutrition and so forth, a believer in olive oil. And recently I went in to get my cholesterol checked, and it was much higher than it was before. And one of the things I had done, among many things, was I've actually lost weight, but I've added olive oil to my diet, and like where you would do the dipping, get the bread and dip it in the olive oil. And I mentioned that to my doctor, and she said that it's not really proven that olive oil is good or bad for lowering cholesterol. And she suggested canola oil. So I just wanted to see, and she also had mentioned that I believe olive oil is a monounsaturated fat, and she had mentioned that that is not necessarily so good.
Well, canola oil and olive oil are both monounsaturated fats, and when we look at it, they don't lower cholesterol. That's not necessarily what they do. The issue is that they may reduce the risk of heart disease. And, you know, lowering cholesterol is only one of the constellation of risk factors. You want to make sure you exercise right, you don't smoke cigarettes, don't drink alcohol to excess, get your blood pressure under control, you know, watch your salt and so on. So when we look at olive oil doesn't lower cholesterol. She's 100% correct. There's no proof that it lowers cholesterol.
Okay.
But there is proof that in societies where olive oil is the main oil, i.e. societies around the Mediterranean Sea, Spain, Greece, Italy, all around the Middle East, there's less heart disease. And we think, for the most part, that's due to the fact that olive oil is the chief oil versus in our society where the chief oil that we get is mostly fat, you know, is animal fat, animal oil.
Okay.
So
okay.
In societies where oil is animal fat, there's more heart disease. In societies where oil basically is olive oil, there's less. And that's kind of where it comes from. The Mediterranean diet is rich in olive oil. But olive oil, canola oil are both equally good. They're both monounsaturated fats. And the fact is olive oil tastes better. Canola oil is pretty tasteless. I use it, but it doesn't have taste.
Well, thank you. I really enjoy the show.
Hey, great, and thank you very much. We appreciate the call. Zorba, here's an email on cholesterol that few of us will relate to. This one from Mark in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Mark's problem is that his cholesterol is too low. He says his total numbers have been below 100 for a couple of years now. He would like to know how to address this and wonders if he should start loading up on red meat and lard or take an emergency dose of barbecue ribs.
No, sounds good to me.
So.
You know, the issue is, why is he worried about a low cholesterol? I mean, that's
there's
the first
no such
question.
Thing as too
well,
low.
No, a low cholesterol. There was a theory out a number of years ago that a low cholesterol put you at risk for cancer, and that was a theory for a while. We now know that some people who develop cancer then develop a low cholesterol because they're not producing as much because they're sick. They're sick from cancer.
So
low cholesterol doesn't
there, yeah.
cause cancer. It's that low cholesterol may be a symptom of cancer, especially in somebody who has a cholesterol of 200, 220, if they go down to a cholesterol of 100, you look and you say, what's going on with their body? But a congenitally low cholesterol is not necessarily bad, but a low cholesterol may mean a low HDL, and we know that especially guys who have an HDL below 30 and especially below 25 are actually at risk for heart attack and stroke.
Oh.
So the fact is, A low cholesterol, unless you know what kind of cholesterol, can actually be a risk factor for heart attack and stroke. So you can't elevate the HDL that well. We give, you know, we tell people to exercise, maybe have a glass of wine in the evening, but sometimes that doesn't
barbecue do ribs wouldn't hurt.
I don't think it would. I'm always up for barbecue ribs.
Let us know your health and lifestyle question by sending it in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Some interesting research coming up next. We have our medical myth buster and more of your calls, too, right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Again, that toll-free number, want to talk with Zorba? Dial 800-462-7413. I guess you don't dial anymore, do you?
Dial is the word, though. It just has two meanings.
Dial isn't punching.
No, but you say dial, even though nobody dials.
Yeah, but
my
you
kids
shouldn't,
don't know
because a dial is a
no,
dial.
No, it has a different meaning. You think dial
you
means dial.
You still say dial?
Yeah, I
call,
say dial the number.
Call 800.
Yeah, I say dial.
Anyway.
But I was brought up with the dial.
Before we get to our next caller, tell us about this diabetes pill, which may have a heart attack risk.
Avandia. Very interesting. And first of all, I want to say I do clinical research, and we actually studied Avandia. We did a number of studies years ago before FDA approval. So I want to give that disclaimer. It's also a drug. There are two drugs in this class, Avandia and Actos, and I prescribe both of them in different ways. And they're a drug that is called an insulin sensitizer essentially make insulin work better in the body. And it's one of three drugs that we often give, three commonly used drugs that we often give for adult onset diabetes. And there's some other drugs that we also use.
Well, what's the study?
Well, this is a study of studies, and it's a very disturbing study published in the New England Journal of Medicine. The researcher pooled data from dozens of studies looking at about 30,000 people who were on Avandia versus other drugs or placebo, and looking at these studies to see whether or not there was a difference in heart attack risk. So he's pooled the data. There is a strength to that, and there's a weakness to that. All studies are not produced the same way. They're not looked at the same way, and so you can argue about this. But what he found was that it appeared to be a 43% higher risk of heart attack of those taking Avandia versus those taking either placebo or other diabetic drugs.
A 43%?
Well, if it's true, it's a very, very disturbing thing. And when I say if it's true, and the reason is you can't take one study and say this really indeed is the case, even though it's in a prestigious journal, and say that it's true. But the real issue, even before this, is an FDA issue. And the issue is, and there's new legislation in front of Congress now, is the FDA has to monitor drugs after they come out on a regular basis to find out whether or not there are side effects. This drug has been around for 7 or 8 years. And if this is new data, why wasn't it picked up before?
And they never do that.
They don't do it because there's no standardized, regimented way.
Yeah.
If I think something has a side effect, I write a note to the FDA and supposedly they capture the data. But heart attacks are common in diabetics. Yeah. Somebody's got to collect this data and monitor these drugs.
Well, do you keep prescribing this drug now?
Well, at this point, I would prescribe the drug Actos. I wouldn't prescribe the drug Avandia until it's proven that Avandia indeed is safe. And I think it's now up to the FDA to be able to look at this data and make a decision. And I think every patient must talk to their doctor if they're on this drug.
That toll-free number is 800-462-7413. And Zorba, our next caller is in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hello, how you doing?
Fine. How can we help you?
I'm calling because I had a question about gum retraction. And I actually visited my dentist a couple of times and for different reasons, cavities mostly. But I told him about the two times that I went to him that I felt like some of my gums were retracting. And he told me initially that was because of my toothbrush that I was using. And I asked him if there was a problem with that, and he said no. But he said, you know, if you change your toothbrush from hard to soft or medium, that will stop. Well, the first time that I did listen to him, nothing happened. And the second time I went to him and I told him, you know, this still happening. He's like, oh, don't worry about it. It happens, you know. And he said that this shouldn't be a big problem. Unfortunately, when I get a, you know, hot cup of coffee or some cold drink, it becomes a problem because it's so sensitive. Hmm. So I was wondering whether you guys have heard of something that could be done in order to avoid that or maybe even recede from the gum being retracted.
Well, there are a number of things that can cause this. First of all, are you on any pills or medications at all?
None whatsoever.
Okay, because there's certain pills, there's certain medicines that can actually do this and cause gum retraction. Well, what kind of toothpaste do you use? Are you on a Sensodyne or one of the sensitive toothpastes?
I used Sensodyne for a while just to make sure that the sensitivity would go away, but it really didn't go away.
Mm-hmm. A while is how long?
Maybe about a month and a half.
Okay, well, that's a while. I mean, for some people, a while is a week, which
can
is
I,
not
can
a
I
while.
Ask, do you floss? Because wouldn't flossing kind of help prevent that?
Actually, I do not floss because my dentist told me that if I use Listerine, it was pretty much the same thing as flossing.
Not so. And in fact, one of the issues that came out with Listerine was they claimed that using Listerine every day, using it for 30 seconds twice a day was as good as flossing. And that Listerine is made by, I don't remember which company, I think it's Pfizer, but I don't quote me on that. Well, you can quote me on that. I'm not sure it's Pfizer. But they had to retract that because there's no proof of that at all. This was not a minor issue. This was a big issue because the FDA made a cease and desist warning that using Listerine was not the same, and they couldn't advertise that on the bottle that it's as good as flossing. And I don't think that I think that flossing is basically in a category of itself to help prevent gum disease. I think regular having your teeth cleaned at least twice a year, mm-hmm. using an electric toothbrush with a reasonably soft or medium bristle, and maybe using a water pick, all these things I think will help really improve your gums and gum disease. But flossing, Tom is right. Flossing is the issue because quite often.
I'm sorry, I changed dentists. If a dentist tells you don't have to floss, who ever heard of that?
No. I mean, they're all into flossing. How old is this dentist?
Well, he's about like 40 something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with Tom. I would get a second opinion from another dentist because I think flossing really is the key. There's also these little sort of a battery powered electric flossers called a Hummingbird. I like it because it vibrates a little bit. My teeth are close together and it's easier for me to do that. I would look at flossing. I would certainly consider using a mouthwash like Listerine, but it is not a substitute for flossing, and an electric toothbrush with a mild bristle. But I definitely would get my gums examined by another dentist. Any dentist who says don't floss, I think you need a second opinion.
Okay, sure. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We appreciate the call. Zorba, let's get to our myth buster. Hopefully, today's myth will clear up an old thought that stressful times can lead to acne. Is this true?
No, it's not.
Really?
Yeah, stressful times do not necessarily lead
acne. Acne does not break out when one is going through unusual stress.
Not necessarily. Now, if you look at some measurements of stress, there's some people who have said when they have high emotional stress, they're more likely to experience breakouts. But when you really look at the acne data totally, mm-hmm. you find that teenagers are always under stress. There's always something going on. It's either something going on at school or it's something going on at home or they're not eating right or, you know, they can't get the car. There's something else going on. And then inevitably, when they have a pimple, it immediately seems to show that this, you know, this is obviously caused
but
it.
But not so.
I don't think that's the case. I think that when you look at the data that you find out that there are lots of things that can cause breakouts, but the things that really cause the breakouts are simply being a teenager and having time going on. But I think that it's a myth that emotional stress causes acne breakouts. Now, I want to give a caveat to that.
Sure.
Individual people find individual things affects them. So mm-hmm. we will find that some people say, yes, I always have stress and I break out. But when you look at globally what's going on with teenagers and acne, I think that it is a myth that emotional stress causes breakouts.
We were talking with a listener early in the hour about canker sores and disease inside the mouth. How about stress on that? Same thing as that?
Well, it's a very similar thing. Like I said, when I when we were going to do a study on canker sores.
When I'm stressed, I think I get these.
Absolutely. But sometimes you're stressed and it doesn't happen, and so you don't notice it. When you're stressed, you tend to notice more things because you're stressed. Mm-hmm. And if we look at what age people want to be at, if you take people in their 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, and you say, what were the best times of your life? What age would you like to be at? Almost no one wants to be a teenager. Almost nobody. They may say, gee, I'd like to be in my 20s, like to my body in my 20s, like to be healthy in my 20s, not have my joint aches. But nobody wants to go back to 16 or 17 years of age. Nobody wants to go back on the whole. And that's because that was often emotionally a very stressful time of who you find out who you are. So, yes, I think that emotional stress causes acne for everybody is a myth.
Do you have a myth for us? We'll try to bust it or prove it right. Just send it along in an email to
Zorba at WPR.org.
Now back to the phones we go at 800-462-7413. Lafayette, Indiana joins us. Hi.
Hello.
What's up?
Hey, I had a question as we approach the summer months as to the best way to get water in. I ref soccer games that can last an hour and a half, 45-minute halves. Should you load up on water ahead of time, or is there some problem? I mean, obviously, you don't want to be too full when you're running like that, but there's no way to carry water on the field.
Yes, that's exactly it. Well, first of all, a reasonable guide for how much to drink is how thirsty you are. Now, before an event, you can't depend on that guide, right? Because you're not necessarily thirsty.
Right.
The way to figure out how much you really need is to kind of monitor when you have to urinate. You know, if you don't have to urinate at the end of a game, you're probably not keeping up with your losses. In other words, if you produce urine, that means you are certainly keeping up with your losses, and if your urine isn't concentrated. So I kind of would judge it and see, you know, you can get a good feeling for how much you need based on that. You know, if you have to urinate after 20 minutes in the game, then obviously you're drinking too much water.
Uh-huh. And the dizziness or lack of concentration, ability to focus, any of those types of things occur with that?
Well, that may occur from drinking too much water, drinking too little water, or not having your Starbucks in the morning or your local coffee in the morning. I mean, I get up, I have a cup of coffee in the morning. So you mean you're, and not to make light of it, you're having trouble concentrating in the middle of the game?
Well, no, you know, it's just every so often. You know, you have to make a lot of snap decisions.
Yes, you do.
A lot of rapid.
You bet. I have four kids in soccer.
If you do it wrong, of course, everybody's on your case about it.
That's right. I don't know if that's due to hydration or just wrong decision. Maybe you're just making bad judgment. I mean, I've been to some of those games. Some of those refs are good, and some of those refs, I've been in the stands. What do you mean?
A typical parent.
Don't you have eyes in the back of your head?
A typical parent.
Yeah, I think I've heard you.
Yes. Well, thanks a lot for your call.
Yes.
Zorba, thank you, too.
A pleasure, Tom.
For a copy of this week's recipe on all things Zorba, visit us on the web
at zorbapastor.org.
Call us anytime with your health and lifestyle questions at 1-800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's produced by Adam Friedrich. Our executive producer is Charles Monroe Kane. Brad Kohlberg connects all the wires, and Gigi Holland fills your recipe requests. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, expecting your company on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0628Z. More on healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, show archives, and listener feedback, is available online at zorbapastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.